Service in Lincoln says central Illinois will see wind chills ranging from 0 to 10 below zero through tonight. There's a chance of snow midweek, Wednesday night and Thursday. High temperatures today will range from the single digits in northern Iowa to around 20 degrees in southern Missouri. Lows tonight will range from the teens below zero in southern Minnesota to the teens above zero in southeastern Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny, bitterly cold and blustery. The high 13. The wind from the northwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30 miles per hour. Wind chill readings from 4 degrees below zero to 14 degrees below zero. Tonight, bitterly cold, mostly clear with a low of 2. The wind will be from the northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wind chill readings from 3 below to 13 below zero. Tomorrow, very cold and mostly sunny with a high of 17. The wind light and from the west. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of 10 and a light wind from the southeast. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high of 25. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, not as cold. There's a chance for snow. The temperature will hold steady in the mid-20s. The outlook for Thursday and Friday, mostly cloudy with highs in the upper 20s and lows in the upper teens. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from 9 to 24. Skies were mostly clear, although there was some lake effect snow in Indiana. In Illinois, at Chicago, at Danville, and at Carbondale, 14 degrees reported. Effingham checked in with 13 and Bloomington Normal 9. At South Bend, 24 with light snow. Lafayette, 16. Indianapolis, 18 with light snow. Terre Haute and Evansville reporting 14 degrees. At Willard Airport at the top of the hour, it was 11 degrees. The dew point 4. The wind out of the northwest at 21 miles per hour, giving us a wind chill index of 8 below zero. The relative humidity, 73%. The barometric pressure, 30.18, and falling. And at 12:39 Central Time, 12 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Music icon Pat Boone is launching a line of meat products called All American Meats. 5% of the sale of each item purchased will go to conservative Christian organizations like Mercy Corps and Focus on the Family. NPR's Robert Smith has more.
Pat Boone recorded more than 1,500 songs. None of them, as far as I can tell, about meat or meat byproducts, unless you count this one.
I'll meet you in the morning, in the morning, with a
house. And yet now this gospel and early rock and roll star has his name on a line of ribeyes and porterhouses. Pat Boone's All American Meats, available online. Now this does raise a couple of questions. First of all, is Pat Boone still kicking?
All my life, people have asked, why do you look younger than we know you are?
Yes, he's now a healthy 76 years old and still performing. Which leads us to question number two. What does singing have to do with selling meat?
These friends of mine in Colorado were looking for an iconic image for it, somebody that people will trust if he says they're the best meats in the world, with a strong charitable component, good conservative traditional causes, mainly feeding the hungry.
5% of each meat purchase will go to charities like Mercy Corps and Focus on the Family. In short, Pat Boone wants to become the conservative Paul Newman.
That would suit me fine. Now, Paul and I laughed and talked about it because we were friends.
Pat Boone has a track record of twisting a good idea and making it a hit. Listen to what he did to Little Richard's music in 1956. But remaking Paul Newman's success is a little more difficult. Other than Jimmy Dean sausages and Newman's own line of salad dressings and snacks, you'd be hard-pressed to find singers and actors on food labels.
There are some economic realities.
Bill Cross is the vice president of Broad Street Licensing Group. They help brand food products. Cross says that celebrities usually gravitate to clothing and luxury items because it's relatively easy to jump into that business.
basically fashion is about what's hot now. And what's that line from Project Runway? Today you're in, tomorrow you're out.
But you can't just dabble in food products. You have to make sure that it's safe and affordable, and it needs to squeeze into a very crowded marketplace.
Especially with traditional grocery stores, you have to pay to get your products in there. It's called slotting fees. You essentially say to a Safeway or a Kroger, I will pay you $1 million to have my brand on your store shelves.
Bill Cross says he's tried to work with celebrity chefs, who you think would be a natural to get into the grocery stores, but they often don't want to endorse a product that's cheap enough to make it in the brutal retail industry. So how did Paul Newman do it? Let's go to the movie clip.
You got to plan more. You got to prepare more.
Maybe there's a way to make a profit in this.
You see, Butch Cassidy wanted to make money. But Paul Newman positioned his food products with the unheard-of step of giving away all the profits. The CEO of Newman's Own Foundation, Bob Forrester, says the philanthropy part can look easy, but making good food is the real challenge.
If I were to start a company now, it wouldn't be the food business. Even though it's good from the point of view that people will always need to eat, it's just a tough, tough, tough business. And you're going up against very, very big companies.
So Forrester has some advice for Pat Boone and his new meat business.
Do things that you believe in. Not just the philanthropic part, but believe in the product that you're dealing with, as opposed to just saying, well, let's put our name on meat and see how it works.
Because there's always a more famous name out there. Donald Trump has tried to market steaks. Martha Stewart is experimenting with gourmet meat products. But Pat Boone thinks that he has an edge with the conservative crowd. He's recently been active in the Tea Party, and he started the Beverly Hills branch, and he's long funded Christian causes. Boone and his business partner, J.W. Roth, admit that this might turn some customers off, but Roth is willing to take the chance.
If I can have 100% market share of real, loyal, conservative customers, a lot of times it's better to take that position than try to be everything to everybody.
In a way, it's a lot like Pat Boone's career. The loyal fans will seek him out. Now it's just a matter of seeing how many there are. Robert Smith, NPR News, New York.
Will you play host to friends and family through the Christmas and New Year's season? Chef Nigella Lawson insists entertaining need not be stressful. The author most recently of Nigella's Kitchen, Recipes from the Heart of the Home, Lawson spoke with Morning Edition host about about some quick appetizers, drinks, and desserts that are sure to please.
You've got something called sherry glazed chorizo. We've talked about chorizo before, and this is bits of sausage, right?
Well, it is bits of sausage, but I feel that since I've eaten it in a tapas bar in Seville, I don't feel that I'm just being incredibly lazy. And this is really chorizo sausage, which you slice into coins and then cook till it slightly colours and scorches. And then at the last minute, I splash in some sherry. Now, I use a sherry that would make some people raise an eyebrow, which is a cream sherry. But I quite like the extra sweet note. It's quite a laid-back recipe because it just takes under 5 minutes to make, and you can use the sherry of your choice.
As simple as this dish is, and I'm looking at a photograph here in one of your books, I mean, it's one ingredient. It's hunks of meat on a plate, but it's very attractive. It almost glistens. It's got a glaze on it of sorts.
Well, it really does because of the amount of sugar. There's the small amount of sugar in the sherry seems to catch. And I think there is just something about that sort of holy trinity, if I may say so, unholy trinity of sugar, salt and fat that makes each mouthful very Moorish.
Very Moorish. What does that mean?
It means you have to have more. You haven't heard that word?
I thought you were talking in geographical terms.
Well, it is Moorish in terms of historically, but it is a Moorish spelled M-O-R-E as well.
Well, let's get a little Moorish with some peanut butter hummus. What is it?
Well, peanut butter hummus is one of my greatest discoveries of this year. It's a hummus that you make instead of normally using tahini, which is a really sesame butter. If you think of it, it's just crushed sesame seeds. I used peanut butter. So what you get, rather than that normal, slightly pale hummus, you get one that's more like the brown envelope you might get a bill in. And it's absolutely fantastic. And really, all you're doing is putting in a blender some chickpeas, a garlic clove, some olive oil, peanut butter, a bit of lemon juice and some salt. And then I like to whiz it up with a teeny bit of thick yogurt and some ground cumin. And you have the most fantastic puree, which you can either, you know, smear into little pockets of pita, or you can use breadsticks to dip in. It's one of those dips that you do keep going back into. But I think, on the other hand, it's quite useful because at this time of year, if you just want to put one thing out with drinks, it is perhaps a more friendly mixed generational snack.
Oh, because my daughter might eat something with peanut butter in it, for example.
But it's really, in fact, it sounds like it's a slightly jokey addition to an appetizer platter, but actually it isn't. It's got a very sophisticated taste, but there's no intrinsic superiority from sesame seeds to peanuts.
So it's just that
we're more used to peanuts.
So if I asked you if you could spread this hummus on bread and put some jelly on and another piece of bread, you would probably slap me or something. You wouldn't do.
I wouldn't slap you. The pity of radio is you can't see the rather stern look I'd be giving you. If you're not born into it, peanut butter and jelly is a difficult step to take.
Okay.
But I certainly, you can make, this would be fantastic on toast and great in sandwiches and the sort of thing you'd want to be eating as you watch TV with a very cold beer in front of you as well.
There you go. Let's talk about something sweet. You've got a chocolate orange loaf cake to describe here.
Well, I do know this is the sort of useful thing, which is it's the sort of cake that used to be called in old-fashioned England a cut-and-come-again cake, because someone drops by, you know, you take their bonnet and hang it up and slice them a bit of cake and they sit with a cup of tea or coffee and then go on their way until your other visitors arrive. It's actually like a chocolate pound cake, but you add the zest of two oranges and the juice of one to it. So it's quite intensely orangey. But in England, at any rate, chocolate orange is a very Christmas flavour. That's our idea of a treat at this time of year. But I actually think that sometimes it's nice to remind people that a plain cake that is not frosted can be a very deep pleasure, and it doesn't have to be over-sugared or over-fancy.
And let me just say, there is no frosting on this. It's just cake. It's just a piece of cake.
And it's baked in a loaf tin.
And
or loaf pan, you'd call it.
So we've got these wonderful little dishes. We can leave them around on the table. We can serve them, and it's something a little less than a full meal. What should we have to drink?
Well, I have a real weakness for a drink that the Italians, the chic northern Italians, call Prosecco Sporco, which means dirty Prosecco, but I translate it as filthy fizz. Prosecco being the fizzy Italian wine.
What's dirty and about it?
Well, they dirty it with a small slug of Campari, which is very bitter and, in fact, not at all dirty. It's a beautiful bejeweled red, very, very good for the time of year. But I should also say, if you want to, I've often been in favour of going to